another episode of the Tracklist Podcast Show. I'm Taryn Jenkins.
I'm Chris Saunders.
And on today's show, we are doing the 2023 documentary, Little Richard, I Am Everything, the life and career of Little Richard, the one of a kind rock and roll icon who shaped the world of music, directed by Lisa Cortez, of course, starring Little Richard, with a host of music legends throughout this movie. I couldn't really get a good handle on how much this movie cost.
I couldn't find a budget either.
Yeah, me either. I just assume it made some money. How about that? It made some money.
I mean, it says 2023, but I think it was released.
Yeah.
Or at least scheduled to be released like in 2020 or something like that, right when the pandemic hit. So,
yeah, I think so.
But the box office is $179,000, which is paltry. I'm seeing like IMDb 7.4 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes critics 95%, audience 98%, which is pretty high.
Wow. Which that might be one of the highest rated films we've ever done.
Close. It's very close.
That's kind of ridiculous, but okay.
But I mean, I will say I'm probably not going to give it that high. Let's go throw that out there right now.
Without giving spoilers. Yeah.
But I mean, we do get a great like package right off the bat with, you know, you see his piano playing, you hear his voice come in. I mean, you see the classic little Richard hair. So that was the energy is there to start out. I will have to say some of the effects they were using in this movie or this documentary seem a little absurd to me.
A little cheesy, right?
Yeah, like the 80s cartoon styling, like the universe in the back. I know, what's the word they use for him?
What do you mean?
It's not like a star, but like...
Flamboyant?
He was some kind of like explosion or whatever, like a galaxy being formed, right? That's kind of how they described him. So I guess that's why they use that stuff, but it was too much.
Yeah. You know, what's funny about this documentary is that, Little Richard's a lot of people consider him the founder, the icon of rock and roll. And, I tell you, it feels like he knew it literally from the moment he was born. Try to make you believe that the whole time.
Yeah, that's how that's what this documentary would have you believe. And I he comes off as a cocky some bitch.
A little bit.
But as you watch it further and you understand like the hurdles he had to jump over and like all the things he lost.
Right.
Like not even owning his own masters and not making like not getting the money from his recordings and performances. Like I get the reaction to do that.
Yeah.
It still is a little much.
And one of my criticisms for this documentary is, to be honest, I don't know if they really painted the picture as accurately as possible of how hard it was for him to get to where he was. Like, it was almost too much of them speeding to the end of his career. He's great versus us kind of going along for the ride on the bumps and bruises of some of the stuff he went through. Like they did some, but like, to be honest, I mean, it wasn't that easy. It wasn't as easy as they made it seem. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, they did speed through like the whole, like you say, getting there, like making it. It's just like, they did want to speed through his young life, his father, his relationship with his father being a minister, but like, here's a what the fuck moment. Also, having a nightclub and being a moonshiner, like, as well as a minister, like, what the fuck moment. They speed through all that and like how it was like being LGBTQ at that time, being black at that time. It is a bit rushed. And then they do focus a lot on, him being a star, but then like this kind of flip flop he does between, you know, accepting that he's gay and then rejecting that. So, they do all of that part without really exploring it. It's just really weird.
Exactly. They didn't explore it at all. I remember when he was on Johnny Carson show, and talking about, it was weird because you see this man who you know is this flamboyant ball of energy, and he's dressed like, you know, in his suit and totally not Little Richard-esque.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking how weird it was, like something else was going on. And we don't get any of the backstory of that moment. That's a huge moment in his career. I mean, Johnny Carson is a huge, like for any artist back at that point in time, if you weren't Johnny Carson, you made it. And didn't seem like it was like he made it, but didn't make it because he didn't really acknowledge the pieces of him that the public had come to know.
Yeah, I definitely struggled with the whole presentation of this.
Yeah,
obviously, and let me rewind also by saying that whole speech. I guess it was a Hall of, or like not the Hall of Fame speech, but because he didn't make the Hall of Fame because he was in an accident. Right. But the other one where they had finally acknowledge him being like a god, you know, a forefather of
the rock, lifetime achievement that he got,
which to me was like the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame speech, yeah, where he's calling out motherfuckers left and right. That was like before I was born, like when I was really, I think was that 1980 or something. It was before I was born, so. For me, I've always been like, oh yeah, Little Richard, clearly one of the greatest, right? Like one of the forefathers of rock and roll. Right. I understand watching this that like throughout his career, he had to be the one to reiterate that to everybody else because he wasn't given the recognition. But just looking back, right, I'm just like in 2020 hindsight, I'm like, wow, this dude like really thought a lot of himself.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, like, he does kind of like, he calls himself the, you know, but you had like a bunch of other artists at the same time.
Yeah.
That were, he's calling himself the god, the
godfather. Is it
godfather or the king of rock and roll?
Yeah.
While there was other people doing it at the same time, not like, not after him, same time. Right.
No, so literally,
like the same Chuck Berry, you can't ignore that guy.
Right.
So that's where I get a little rubbed the wrong way.
So you and I've had this conversation before about our music universe. And to some degree, if you really think about it, I was watching this movie. I was thinking about this. If you go by what he says, he could be the nexus of that universe, right? Supposedly. Like, because it seems like everybody else was kind of following his footsteps. But to your point, you guys were kind of walking side by side, to be honest. I mean, let's not say Keith Richards, David Bowie, all these dudes have already, they've said that they've gained influence from them. Even the Beatles said they got influence from Little Richard's on some degree, but influence and like, you know what I mean? Like there's a difference between like everybody influences everybody to some degree. I don't know if I can, you know where I'm going with this.
But they all, he also taught himself talks right. about, or well, at least in this documentary, right. They talk about Billy Wright, right. who's also a flamboyant artist and openly gay, like his style kind of came from that, right? Escarita, they say, taught Little Richard how to play piano and also played standing up, right? I don't know how he can like claim this thing
at the same time of saying this happened,
right? And hanging out with these people, these artists, and like, you know, definitely learning from them. So it is hard for me to be like,
right?
But what's the saying? Like, if you're great, you don't have to say you're great. And again, but then there's that balance of. Right. A lot was taken away from him. A lot of credit was taken away from him. So I get the reaction to do that, but I'm just like, let other people say it for you.
And why, while the Academy or, you know, the labels, maybe they will never say it, artists tend to kind of stick together when it comes to that shit. Hmm. And they may, you know, for the most part, if they will give each other street creds, especially back in the, you know, the times he was growing up, because I think they kind of understood how hard it was for them to try to do what they were trying to do. So to your point, he should have let the artist speak for him versus always trying to be out front and claiming the throne himself. You know, like Muhammad Ali didn't, he bragged, but he backed it up. You know what I mean? We saw it. We saw it happen. He didn't have to go out and tell people how great he was because we could see it. And Chuck, with Chuck Berry, like, why wasn't he the greatest? Why wasn't, because he's had just as much influence on rock and roll and playing guitar as anybody.
Well, and again, right, one person played piano, one person played guitar.
Right.
So, and I'll ask a question about this later, but we've kind of addressed this whole thing. And then to add on top of that, I'm not like shitting on Little Richard Moore. I'm kind of shitting on the documentary itself. Right. I'm 23 minutes in, and I just want to hear more than 10 seconds of a song.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Why? What, we did one recently where we like, they played a lot of big, was it Amy? Yeah. It was probably Amy Winehouse, but they played big chunks of the song. They put the written lyrics on the screen for you. Like, oh, and then what am I going to say now, Darren? Songwriting. Where they talk about, he talks about, I wrote these songs and Elvis didn't write shit, but we don't get that process.
We don't get the process. We don't
hear about the process. And
we don't see the lyrics. None of that. Matter of fact, a couple of the songs that they played alternative lyrics for the song. And I'm like,
not to mention, like, we do hear some extended cuts of the songs, but it's contemporary artists singing them as well.
Right.
So I wasn't thrilled with how this was presented.
And again, to your point, this is not us shitting on Little Richard because he's done what he's done. He is who he is, and that's it. I think this is more about the creative choices that were made in the creation of this documentary.
I watch the performance videos, and this guy is drenched in sweat.
Yeah, I was
during these performances like that. He literally put everything. He's like an athlete on the field or the court or on the ice. He's just drenched in sweat. He put everything in his performances, and that is just amazing. Just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. This is like, we just happened to be doing this podcast the day after the Grammys, 2024 Grammys. And they did a tribute to Tina Turner on the show itself. Mm-hmm. Those kind of artists don't even exist anymore. They just don't. Like, where, I mean, you saw pictures of Little Richard climbing the speakers, standing on the piano. He literally, the shirt is just clinging to his back and he's taking his shirt off. I mean, he used all the whole stage.
You do see it, but you see it with like grunge rockers.
Yeah.
Right? And you mentioned Tina Turner. They mentioned Ike Turner in this documentary as another influence. Talking about the style of play,
I was surprised at
using his left hand for boogie woogie, but the right hand was more percussive.
Percussion. Yeah.
That's how they describe like Ike Turner's style, right? Like, and it's crazy. Like, I love that they showed us some of the shots of his hands on the keys, and like, wow, like that right left right brain action is insane.
Absolutely insane. And that's what's so disappointing. That's why this documentary is so disappointing, because there's a lot of meat left on that bone, man. Because, I mean, just the shots of him playing, the fingering and stuff was insane. It was almost like, I don't even know how many are. There's only a few piano players I could even, off the top of my head, and think might even touch something like that. And even then, I don't think they could.
See, that's what I'd want to see. I'd want to see like a scientist kind of break down what he's doing.
Like they do with athletes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. And like say like, okay, he's doing it at this tempo or pace on the left hand, and then he's doing like at this tempo on the right hand, and what that takes for a human being to do that. And I feel like they missed an opportunity there as well.
Yeah, that would be cool. He's pretty, you know, his fingers are moving 23 miles an hour to, you know.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. I mean, that would be dope.
I mean, I mentioned, like, by the way, like with the edits and the effects, which is like a what the fuck moment for me. But also not just like stars exploding, but like animals and sperm and galaxies and just all this random imagery was just so distracting. I just didn't understand what that choice was.
The only thing I can think of is that they kind of were trying to give the film a personality that was similar to Little Richard. And that's the only way I could think of it. Like this, because Little Richard, if you, like when he went on talk shows, there was a reason why a lot of talk shows didn't want him on, because you just never knew who you were going to get. You know what I mean? And he made the white establishment very uncomfortable when he came on talk shows. So I feel like this movie supposedly has this personality that is chaotic and flamboyant. And that's the only reason why, the only thing I can think of, but I don't even think they did that well enough for me, for the general public to kind of get.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about that making white communities uncomfortable, and then you look at this other what the fuck, which is not Little Richard, but society.
Yeah.
Which is just like the Pat Boone covers of his songs.
Oh my God. I was so mad.
It's horrible. It's horrible. It's terrible.
It's horrible for white people. It's horrible in general. It's just.
And even the Elvis Presley ones, right? Like this guy legitimately like has some good songs out there.
Right.
Is considered another godfather, one of the godfathers or forefathers of rock and roll. But even his versions of his songs sounded terrible. Like just let the man sing his own damn songs.
Yeah.
Jesus. And
which backs up your earlier statement about the fact that we really need the songwriting piece of this documentary to kind of back up some of the difficulties of someone else trying to perform this content. It's just,
well,
you know,
it's one of the people they interviewed, Fredara Hadley, says it's hard to keep a straight face when I talk about the Pat Boone covers, and I'm just like, yeah. It's really laughable.
It was I mean I've never seen anything like that, and I did not know that before seeing that on this film. I did not know that Pat Boone, because Pat Boone was pretty big in the 70s, and for no reason.
Can't believe he was big at all.
Yeah.
And I guess it's like a combo what the fuck slash so hold up. Like the covers by white artists. It's just like,
yeah.
I got nothing. I got nothing else to say.
It's got to be like the worst. That's got to be the worst atrocity. For like, I've yet to hear anything worse than that from like a music standpoint of someone appropriating someone else's.
But you hear shit. That a lot around that time, right? I feel like Ray Charles had to deal with that. And he almost cut it off at the pass with like doing his own album. That was like, if he had written it the way he usually writes it, but then white people covered it. So he wrote like, you know, Georgia, that album with Georgia and the full orchestration in the background. And he's like, let me just cut to the chase here. Cut out the middle man. Like, I'm just going to do it. Right. So, you know, Little Richard could have been, you know, successful that way. But then again, then you get accused of like playing white music. Right. So it's a kind of a lose-lose situation.
I will say the one thing I did take away from this movie, which is a new appreciation for Little Richard's interest in, like a being himself and like just doing what he thought he wanted to do. And to, cause if you don't like, you don't appreciate it until you realize all the shit that he had to put up with behind it. You know what I mean? So,
I mean, it's, but like he does do that, but then he doesn't do that. Right. There's several transitions in this movie, maybe probably five or six transitions in the documentary where he's going back and forth between being this, you know, outgoing like gay artist and then going to school to study religion and like
seminary school
and then completely rejecting his sexuality, right? and then coming back and performing again, like going on tour in the UK, and then coming back and going on these talk shows talking about how, you know, God said there's no Adam and Steve, only Adam and Eve. Like, yeah. And then you have the people that other LGBTQ community people like that hurt, right? Those comments hurt. Right. So, and then at the end of his life, it seemed like he went back to that again, right? So it's, it was almost just informational. All this, these transitions were almost informational. It wasn't like getting inside his head and like trying to understand what was going on, or like showing how much turmoil he was dealing with, right? It's just kind of, this happened. He went back and he went forth. So,
yeah, I wish
they had criticizing the film.
Whoever did the Amy documentary, I wish they had done this one.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because by the end of Amy, I felt like I knew her a lot more than I felt like I was there and for a lot of it and just got to, you know what I mean? And I think Little Richard kind of deserved that experience. He deserved for us to understand him. And I will tell you, him switching back when he was in the religious bent, that shit was creepy as fuck, dude. I ain't gonna lie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was like, that's creepy as fuck.
He's saying, like, they said, like, he would, like, walk around campus and, like, if you saw him walking by, you know he's going to stop you and try and pray with you. Like, it's like, I'm just trying to get to class, dog. Like, yeah, so, yeah, it's, I mean, the extremes, like, he was probably also bipolar, dude. Like,
yeah.
I don't think there's any way he wasn't.
Yeah, he definitely, if Little Richard comes around, if he's in his prime right now, I'm sure we're talking about him and bipolar and him going to see therapists, and, you know, he would have been huge. Like, I think he's like one of those artists that we talk about all the time. Like, we talk about that we're ahead of their time. And unfortunately, he didn't know how to handle that.
Yeah. And I mean, but that's, you know, we talk about the 27 Club, right?
Yep.
All of them probably didn't know how to handle it, right?
Right.
So,
right.
He's not the first, and he's not the last.
He won't be the last, unfortunately.
I like how they were talking about race music, though, early on, because they only black music was played on black stations.
Right.
They were saying, like, oh, but the kids found it. Like, I think Chuck Berry said that, but the kids, the white kids found the music. And it was John Waters says, even racists listened to and loved all black music in teenage Baltimore. He's like, even racists. I'm like, all right. can't help from tapping your feet.
That's true, right? I mean, we saw that in the documentary we did earlier. Well, it was not really a documentary, right? The one about Elvis, a little bit of that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that experience as well.
Yeah, if there's a, like, I'm criticizing this film, at least it's a documentary. Like, yeah. Elvis
was just with some glitter thrown on the screen.
But talking more about the positive side of things, I talked about how he's like profusely sweating during these shows, and like when he started going on tour, right, he was opening for some other, you know, bigger acts, and they just said like nobody could follow him. So he had to close the show. So he was the one closing on tour.
Who was that? Janis Joplin, right?
Like, she, what did she do? She like fell down on the floor like she was like dead. And they got up and kept on playing. And like, everyone was just like in awe of her. And what was it? Someone said, oh man, you can't follow that. He's like, go get my jacket or whatever.
My mirrored shirt.
Yeah. Go get my mirrored shirt. He comes back and he like, you know, outdoes Janis Joplin. I haven't seen many videos of her perform, but I've heard about her prowess on stage.
Yeah.
So he's just like, I can do it better. Anything you can do, I can do better.
Here's a question. What was he at Woodstock? And if so, why not?
Maybe this was during the time of his seminary school. But that's what, 69?
Yeah, I think it's 69.
So his career started in 1940, is he 40s? 51, sorry.
Well,
so
he recorded Tutti Frutti in 55, so.
Yeah, so I mean, but that's like 14 years later, right? Like, who knows if he was still writing, if he was doing a seminary on his religious kick, right? Like,
well,
I don't think he was there. I can't remember if I heard him being there.
63, he was touring with the Rolling Stones, both Diddley and the Everly Brothers. So
I have a feeling he was on his religious tip.
Yeah, maybe I think that's about right, because I think he came back from that tour, and that's when he. Yes, that they even said that in the movie. They were talking about after he came back from on tour, everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know right. What happened to him on tour, man.
Well, you know, again, it's there's those like extremes that he went to. He went on tour, and he probably just like, yeah, it was drugs, sex again, and like, and then he comes back and probably like hates himself, and then swings right. The pendulum swings the other way. So and the weird thing that I also noticed was like, you know, I talk about how he was like. He's like kind of cocky.
Yeah.
He himself says, my music broke down the walls of segregation.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm just like, bruh, like
I don't think it did.
You were one of the people that did that. We already right. said Chuck Berry. Even when Ray Charles is a little bit later, right? He's not rock and roll, but he's
yeah, you know, but he's still he's in that class.
And he actually said, you know, we did the Ray movie, like, okay, I don't know how accurate that is. I'm pretty sure it's accurate, but he decided not to do a show in Georgia because they wouldn't, either they were separating black and white people or they wouldn't let black people attend the show. And he decided not to do it. And he was blackballed, right? He was blacklisted from anything in Georgia.
For decades, actually.
Right? So he was still dealing with, you know, the walls weren't completely broken down when Little Richard was performing, right? He might have started that process, but other artists had to deal with it too, and they also helped, right? So I just like, and then he says stuff like, I'm not conceited a bunch of times in the film, right? In the documentary. So it's just a little, it's a little off-putting. I'm not saying he's not great. He's not one of the forefathers of rock and roll.
Yeah.
He pushed things forward for black people in America and LGBTQ people in America. Yeah. But he's not the only person that did it. So I feel like someone could have said that. Some of the people they interviewed could have just said that at least.
Yeah.
Right. To counteract everything he was saying.
Well, when he was accepting that lifetime achievement, if you really look at the David Bowie and the Keith Richards comments, they feel a little forced. They feel like they were like, all right, we'll do this because it's Little Richard, but let's be real, you know, kind of.
Again, it's difficult, right? I think they were also, maybe the word is forced, but maybe they're just like, yeah, this guy really did have so much taken away from, we are happy to do this to honor him.
Right.
So yeah, it's kind of like, it's a balance. They're like floating in between somewhere. Yeah.
It clearly impacted him because he broke down. I mean, I feel bad for him in a lot of ways too, because he truly believed this to himself, and he never heard anyone say that to him until that moment. For him, it must have been cathartic, you know, in a lot of ways.
Cathartic, but also, you know, how much time wasted.
Yeah.
How much time wasted. And yes, this is mostly a tragic story.
Yeah.
At least the way it was told in this documentary, you know, he says right in the beginning, he was born with a short leg and a short arm. So, right, like they talk about him being, I don't know, not disabled, but whatever, not normal, whatever you want to call it. Essentially abused by his father, who was a minister, religious, because of his sexuality. They also grew up in segregated America. grew up where being gay was illegal, not just frowned upon, illegal. Had his music whitewashed. Couldn't reconcile his sexuality with the religious beliefs. Not compensated for his performances and his written music, right? All of this stuff.
Right.
So I do call him cocky, but again, it's just that I understand where it's coming from.
Yeah.
But it's fucking sad. I'm glad he was able to live long enough to be appreciated with the Lifetime Achievement Award and be able to, like, you know, he spoke his mind in a lot of these interviews, but on a big stage where a lot of the people who were influenced or stole from him were there sitting, so he could be like, yeah, I own you.
I found some, this little nugget of trivia, and I was like, say what? In December of 19, he was the minister of record for the marriage between Bruce Willis and Demi Moore.
What was that like? Do you take this man to be your lawfully wedded husband? Shut up! Like,
shut up!
Is that also a what the fuck moment? Or
it's gotta be, right? I mean, damn, okay. Well, it means his reverendness did some good, too. So, yeah.
Well, they didn't stay together, but it's okay.
No.
Well, that was another thing. Like the interviewees also talk about, like, lauded Little Richard for being like the first overtly sexual artist to appeal to white people.
Yeah.
And again, I go back to Chuck Berry. Have you heard the song Reelin' and Rockin'?
Mm. Yes.
Mate, he talking about fucking, and it's not even disguised in any possible way.
That was the one thing in this movie, to be honest, that I maybe I never heard or I forgot of how much his lyrics. I mean, say what you want about Prince. Prince is okay.
Cream.
This dude was he was walking what the fuck moment when it comes to lyrics, and he didn't care. I mean, there's some filthy lyrics, man.
Yeah,
filthy.
I had no idea Tutti Frutti was about
me either.
As they say, anal sex. No clue. Over my head.
I had to go back and think to myself, have I ever sang that song? Did I sing that song? I didn't sing that song, right?
Did you sing that song at karaoke?
Tutti Frutti, hey! Maybe that's...
Yeah. Here's the other thing that they kind of glazed over as well. Oh. Which is definitely a what the fuck moment for me, because Lee Angel was 16 when they met.
Yeah.
And he was definitely much older.
Yeah.
And they just kind of breezed by that one.
That's not important. Look over here. Tutti Frutti.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of the reasons why the movie is what it is, because if they got into the nuts and bolts of some of this shit, we would have been like, is nasty.
maybe it's just better off we don't hear more about it. I did read an article that was kind of talking about that specifically. I think it was IndieWire. It's talking about how they kind of breeze over a bunch of the stuff they mention in sexuality, but they don't go into detail. You know, it's more in name than anything else, right? Just so you mention it. As opposed to like delving into like different relationships he had and how that affected his music and his life, you know, all this kind of stuff, right?
Right.
It's not a lot of detail.
Hmm. In 2000, NBC broadcast a biopic of Little Richard on television. So I'm wondering, I wish I could have found that so I could have seen what that was.
Hmm. Yeah. And yeah, you mentioned like, kind of doing him more justice. And yeah, there's, I'm sure there's been previous documentaries and someone else can make another documentary that's a little more in depth. So
yeah,
I'm not too worried about his legacy not being explored, but yeah, this one didn't quite do it.
He's the one thing I will say about Lou Richard is he's a very interesting dude. I mean, on so many levels. And just when you thought you knew him, like that was one, people say that about Prince too, right? Where he was always doing stuff to kind of be different. He was like, he was never one of these guys who just kind of did the same music all the time, had the same look all the time. He was always changing it up, trying to be different, diversifying. And Little Richard was similar to in that regard. A lot more arrogant than anything. I thought Prince was arrogant, but no, Little Richard got him by miles.
I feel like Prince wasn't so outspoken. But again, he also got the recognition.
Right. And he when he did speak, he spoke when people asked him the question. Like, if you asked him, he was going to tell you. He didn't go looking for a fight. He would let the fight come to him.
But they also talk about Prince giving back and, like, extending his legacy and helping other artists as well.
He's got a large history of that.
And Little Richard may have done that, but they don't talk about it in this documentary, so I don't know, right?
Right.
But how did you feel about – this is right before one of his transitions from, you know, rock and roller to, I don't know, seminary or religion. How did you feel about the whole plane fireball story?
Well, I mean, I don't know, to be honest. I thought it was insane. And I thought it was a little insane. How about yourself?
I was just sitting there like, wow, right? Like, I mean, the word is insane. The word is insane. He mistook something. I forgot what it was for a fireball.
Yeah.
Like an angel flying next to the plane or something. And that caused him to like say, all right, I'm done with my evil way, my heathen ways. Yeah. And I'm going to go study religion and sing gospel.
Crazy. I was like, if this had been today, someone might have looked at lock his ass up.
Well, you know, we going back to the Amy documentary, they talk about people not really giving their help that she needed.
Yeah.
Like she went to rehab and then like her fucking crazy husband came with her and that just didn't help.
Yeah.
So this is the same situation. There was no one there. No one was there to help him.
Yeah.
Like if he had said that shit to me, yeah, I'd be like, all right.
It's time
when we land, we're changing. We're going to redirect this flight to Bellevue, right? Like, you know, and this is like a guy that was also like on drugs and like doing all this stuff and clearly wasn't thinking properly. So, you know, I see parallels between the two.
I have to say, you know, as a musician from the 50s, 60s, maybe even the 70s, I don't know, definitely the 80s because of all the cocaine and shit. Man, those, what, 40, 50 years is a really low time for friends, man. Because, I mean, just some shitty friends. I mean, seriously shitty friends. I feel like the higher you go, the shittier your friends can be. And that's just a bad combination, man.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You kind of see that with a bunch of artists as well. You know, we watched the Elvis movie, not a documentary, and that's how his manager is portrayed, right? Supposed to be his friend, but he's just
that dick.
Yeah, taking all the money. Yeah. So, Ray, that's one thing that Ray Charles, I think, succeeded in and probably maybe saw Little Richard. He, you know, you see in the movie, he's like, I want to own my own masters, like right off the bat. Like, that's the demand.
Yeah.
So, he learned from his mistakes and other artists didn't though. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess this is another case. This is another film that, you know, as musicians, if you're out there and you're watching these documentaries on different music artists, take notes, seriously, take notes and do the opposite of most of everything that they're doing.
That's why a lot of artists now, like, they just like, I'm going to go the indie route because at the very least you have control.
Yeah.
But I've been talking a lot of shit about this documentary, some shit about Little Richard, but I do want to go into our relatively new segment, Holy Shit.
Okay.
Because it's just, like I said before, like just focusing on Little Richard and less the documentary, just like the raw energy of this guy, you know, drenched in sweat during the performances, specifically that London show.
Oh, yeah.
He
takes off his shirt.
I'm surprised he wasn't on coke a lot earlier in his career.
I was surprised when they said when he got on coke. I was like, wait, you sure? Yeah. Because it should have been like 20 years earlier.
Yeah. But like that raw energy, like the Beatles' adoration of him. I mean, they say it themselves. And then his legacy, as you see the Beatles, you see the Rolling Stones. Prince, absolutely.
Yes.
David Bowie says it. And indirectly, like, or kind of combination of Prince and Little Richard, like Janelle Monáe.
Yeah.
Has a lot of that in her.
Yeah.
So, and endless other artists. It, for me, that's just like, wow. You know? So, we can talk all the shit we want about this documentary. We can be like, wow, he was a little crazy, but he was also a genius.
Yeah,
So
I think that's also something that's common amongst great artists. That there's a little you they gotta have a little crazy in them to do what they do.
And also going back to what we said about, let other people say it. There's a clip here with Elvis saying, or I don't know if Elvis said it or someone was saying it for him or referring to the conversation, saying, "You will always be the true king of rock and roll," like
Oh,
Elvis.
right.
So that's great. Elvis said it. Elvis should say it
Right.
because he talk about appropriation.
As I was watching this movie, so Little Richard to me is the living embodiment of everything, everywhere, all at once. Literally, I mean, this dude is—he was everywhere. He was everything. I don't. To your point, I don't know how in the world you could do what he did without drugs. Like, I just don't see it happening. I mean, the frenetic pace at which he was not just performing, practicing, living, being. He was doing this was 24 hours a day, 7 days a fucking week, man. How? There's no, like, he's probably the one of the artists that if someone said to me, oh, he never took drugs, I'd be, get the fuck out of here. There's no way. But and I say that with an immense appreciation and admiration for the talent to do that. That is, I mean, there's no denying. That's why, to your point, he should have let people say it for him because,
We've said all this stuff, and we've bigged him up, and we haven't even talked about the music. So let's just, some of the things they played throughout this very briefly again. Good Golly, Miss Molly, Baby, I'm All Alone, Tutti Frutti, of course, you mentioned, Long Tail Sally, Lucille,
Lucille,
The Girl
rip it
Can't
up.
Help It, Rip It Up, right? So there's he's clearly got a catalog, he's clearly got a legacy. But they also play some other artist stuff in here, which one of them might go under my what the fuck. They got Step It Up and Go by Blind Boy Fuller, Up Above My Head by Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who is called the mother of rock and roll.
Yeah.
Got to talk about her,
Her.
and she was a little bit before him. And then this is my what the fuck by Lucille Bogan, Shave 'Em Dry. Did you hear the lyrics? I got nipples on my titties, big as the end of my thumb. I got something between my legs that make a dead man. They cut it off there. I don't know if the song actually, but yes, it is what you're
Run.
thinking.
It should be run.
I make me run. So
Yeah.
just thought I'd mention that because talking about sexuality in music. But yeah, just wanted to kind of give homage to some of the music they played here. And they should have played it longer. So do you have any quotes or what the fuck moments from this?
I mean, I we already talked about, to me, the biggest what the fuck moment in the movie to me was Pat Boone trying to do Long Tail Sally. I was like, wow. Don't do it, especially this song, because I actually like, that's like what, I'll probably, I mean, I don't want to speak, but that's one of my favorite songs in the movie. And I was just like, don't, please don't ruin it for me.
And he did.
Yeah.
I mean, he says, well, they say that he, Little Richard, created the template for the rock and roll icon. That's a little different than saying Godfather or the King of
Yeah,
Rock and
that's a
Roll,
different
right?
thing.
I would say I agree with that
Yeah.
more. The template for the rock and roll icon, like essentially sex, drugs, and rock and roll,
Yeah. I
right?
mean, Elvis clearly stole from him in his later years. Clearly.
And then you look at Chuck Berry. I mean, I haven't seen a documentary on Chuck Berry. I don't think he was going as full throttle as Little Richard was.
Right. No.
So I will definitely give Little Richard that one.
Yeah, no. Yeah. That's him. That's all him. For sure.
My what the fuck is just his father. Minister, nightclub owner, bootleg house owner.
Like that dude.
What? Contradiction? You talk about Little Richard's contradiction in his life. His father probably got it from his dad.
he has some terrible male role models, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus. No wonder he was like, I'll be gay, because the dudes, some of these dudes, man.
Yeah. I think it's more of our final questions if you're ready for it.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
So it kind of goes back to that quote we mentioned. He created the template for the rock and roll icon. I kind of agree with that, but like, this is more the question of, is he the king of rock and roll? And does that exclude female artists?
We didn't watch this movie to shit on Little Richard. This is not the purpose.
This is not about shitting on him. This is about giving other people their.
But I would say.
Their due as well.
No, he's not. I wouldn't put him as the king of rock and roll. But then if you ask me who, I don't know if I have a real answer for that either.
We mentioned Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry did come technically a couple years after him.
Right.
But they were performing at the same, right? They were coming up at the same time.
Right.
I have a website list of the greatest rock stars of all time. Little Richard is placed at 55.
Oh, really?
Don't know if I agree. I mean, rock star is also a subjective word, right? He's got Slash and Tom Petty behind him and Carlos Santana right ahead of him, Stevie Ray Vaughan ahead of him. What does that mean, rock star, right? But looking at the time, but we mentioned Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who kind of began her career in 1938. Right. So, and when we talk about rock and roll, and its origins is the blues.
Right.
So B.B. King started in the 40s. Right. Ray Charles is blues and, you know, well, combination of things, but he started in 49. So... That's why it's hard for me to be like, you know, I don't want this documentary that's so heavily him talking about how great right. he is to influence the actual like overall discussion. He is one of the most influential yes. musicians in rock and roll.
Absolutely.
But one of is the word is the phrase we should be keying in.
Rolling Stone magazine has a list of their top rock singers, and they place him 12. Mm. On the list, with number one being Aretha Franklin.
Is she rock?
And she's not.
Yeah, she's R&B and soul.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, right. So the lines do get blurred right, as well, right?
Right. I mean, two is Ray Charles, three is Elvis Presley, Sam Cooke.
You said rock singers?
Yeah, that's what this is, right? Let me see.
Like for me, Ray Charles, love him. Is he one of the greatest singers? No. Sam Cooke, yes, but he's also John R&B. Lennon. Like, right? So, Marvin Gaye.
Dylan.
Greatest voices. Not the greatest voice, right? So, this is a terrible list. I can already tell you. Because as far as singing goes, like, forget rock. Little Richard was probably after Aretha Franklin out of everything yes, you just said.
I would agree to that.
So anyway, so we're going to scrap that list. So the IndieWire article I mentioned earlier mentions the erasure, quote unquote, of Little Richard's significance to rock and roll due to using white artists to cover his music. Mm. I feel like, like I said before, I'm fully aware of his significance because I was born after he was given his Lifetime Achievement Award. Do you think that take is accurate?
I think to some degree, yeah. I think there's some legitimacy just based on some of the things we've learned in various documentaries and movies and books and news articles that we've read about how the record labels thought about black music. And while they were very interested in appropriating our style, they didn't want us. They didn't need us per se. And so the best thing they could do was to kind of pump up all these other white artists and then let them have access to those libraries. So I think any artist from that era who makes that argument, I tell them they may have a valid point.
Give me your favorite song and the song you think encompasses his life, I guess that's what we're gonna have to say.
Well, my favorite song off the off this is probably, which I just kind of came to while watching this, was Long Tail Sally. I just thought it was, I just really thought it was a fun song.
Not Shave 'Em Dry,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no.
By Lucille Bogan.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that one. But the song of that, the song that encompasses the movie.
Maybe we just say the song that defines him.
I would say True to Fruity.
Because this is a documentary. So, yeah, probably. That's the one that everybody knows. I said I got nothing, but I'll just put Tootie Fruity. If we're going to alter the...
I don't want to...
The meaning, the question of it.
Tongue in cheek, but yeah.
Or tongue in something else. Sorry. Seriously,
we didn't need to go there, man.
Why? We can be open about sexuality. It's fine. My favorite's Lucille.
Mm.
And yeah, Tutti Frutti is, I'm going to say that defines him. You know, it's one of his early big hits. And again, like that's, I associate that song with him.
Yeah.
But now I'm expanding my catalog, James Brown. Add that some of these things I heard in this documentary to my playlist. So what are we rating this out of 10?
This is not rewatchable. I would not call this one of the best documentaries I've ever seen or close. Like, Amy is head and shoulders above that. I do like that someone tried, and because I feel like he is one of the most misunderstood artists in music. There's that. I'd give it a 7, and I'm being a little bit generous there.
Yeah, I am. Little Richard himself gets a 9.8.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm minusing 0.2 points because of his denial of his sexuality. And
you didn't like
use.
The afro?
No, that's not great. It was fine. It just wasn't him. This film, yeah, I'm giving it a 6. I don't think it was a very good depiction of him, his career. I wanted more songwriting. I wanted more of the music, longer played. And a little more in depth, right? I think the person I was referring to in the IndieWire article says that the director doesn't include interviews with any of his male partners.
Yeah, that's an important piece.
So not addressing the legacy as a queer black man, that's a big miss for me as well. I agree with that. So I give it a 6. You know, it's a 6 because it's Little Richard. He is one of the greatest of all time. He's one of the forefathers of the music. And I'm with you. I'm glad they did this, but I think I would like someone to take another shot at
it. Well, I was thinking about this too, real quick. I think this was created while he was still alive. So I think he had some creative license in some of this, maybe. And that's unfortunately a bad thing to do. And sometimes I think someone should try now that he's passed, and you can kind of be a little bit more free with exploring, you know, a little bit more in depth.
One can only hope.
Hopefully it'll do it again.
Well, yeah. But I mean, this was, I'm glad, I got to watch this just based off the live performances. I got excited off of those. So another one of the books, man. What do you got coming up?
Oh, just, we have our networking event coming up on the 27th. I've got another event on storytelling that I'm doing on the 29th. And then tomorrow I'm on a podcast called Coffee with Cher. So that should be fun. How about yourself?
Well, just trying to think when we publish this. I have a show May 31st at Connolly's.
Oh, you're at Connolly's again.
Times Square. Yep.
I thought that'd be close.
It's at 9 o'clock. And then I have my show in England at the Cove on July 5th. If anyone's in Northern England at that time, come stop by. And looking out my other dates, like, April and June and later in the year.
You ever going to go back to pianos?
Keep an eye out.
Is piano still open?
I reached out to them and they said they're not interested. So that's really fun for me because I've played there half a dozen times.
Wow.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Follow me at Chris_Saunders_music on Instagram and Chris Saunders Music everywhere else, and you'll get the updates.
You can follow me at the Darren Jenkins. But of course, you should subscribe and like and support us at Trackless Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and hopefully soon enough TikTok, but definitely follow us on Instagram. And I guess that's it then for us.
Yeah,
cool. Another one in the books, and I'm Darren Jenkins.
I'm Chris Saunders.
And this was The Track
List.
See you guys. Talk soon.